You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
We know all about you, Chief. You don't go in the water at all, do you?
It's some bad hat, Harry.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got
nerves! Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 102 for the 2nd of October, 2010. I am David McVeigh. When my camera eventually kicks over to me, it will. Here it comes. Hey, there it is. I am David McVeigh, and this is the official film or movie podcast of GeekActually.com. And I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you?
I'm fine. I got the hand right this time. It wasn't waving off camera. Yeah, I love when I do that because I wave off camera and no one can see what's going on. So I just look like I'm just standing there.
You know who really can't see what you're doing is the audio listeners.
Anyway, waving loudly.
And I'm also joined in studio by the returning Brandon McClelland. How are you, Brandon?
Hello. I'm very, very good. Glad to be back.
It's been a while.
It has.
You haven't been on since we changed everything around.
Yeah, it used to be Geek Actually, now it's Film Actually.
I know. So it's a little bit more focused.
It's like a
laser beam focus now.
Not at all. It's had a little bit more time and love poured over it. That's true.
And I would like to announce though that I am very proud to announce that we did chart on Australian iTunes this week. We are number 18 in the film and TV podcast category.
And that's not on New and Noteworthy.
No, that's the chart.
That's on the actual
chart. That's
charts.
The chart. Right. So number 18, we are also in the New and Noteworthy category right at the top of the page. So I was very happy about that too. We are also in the New and Noteworthy of the main page, which I was very happy about. So you click over to iTunes and we're right there on the front page. So I actually took screen captures of all of it because I was so excited.
But you didn't put it on the site?
No, because you know what? That just felt like I was skiding a little bit. I put it on Twitter though.
I'm sorry. I think we should post it everywhere, man.
I think we should too, maybe. Maybe later on.
Look at us. We're awesome.
We are. And also want to say that this has been our best month ever on the site. So all those people who come over and read our site, I'm very, very grateful to you all. We've had a really great month in general of the month of September. So let's keep it up. Let's see what we can do in October. Let's see if we can double that again. That'll be really good. Okay. Let's move on. What are we doing this week? We've got a little bit of entertainment news, including two trailers that I want to play for you, because one of the trailers is the Coen Brothers' new film.
Yes.
Yeah, baby. And which is their remake of True Grit. We've talked about it on the show before. And I've often said about remakes that, you know, you hear about remakes and your heart just drops and you go, why the hell are we doing this? This is one remake I've been excited about since the day I heard about it. And the first trailer, the first teaser has come out, and it is awesome. Yeah. And we also have a trailer for a new sci-fi film that I had never heard of before. And I kind of went, what the hell is this new sci-fi film? And I looked at the trailer and went, this thing is goddamn epic. It's like something out of Roland Emmerich's stable. It's like, what the hell? Where did this come from? So we will play that and we will talk about that as well. And we also have a new list of five. We're going to talk about Michael Douglas films because, of course, this week we are going to review Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, or Wall Street 2, or whichever category you want to fall under. But the second
I've
Wall Street
I've got other
film.
Words for it, but I'll say that later.
Before we start on our review, do you guys have anything to report throughout your week?
No?
Boy, you guys are
I've got stuff, but it's our show-related. We got on show lists for a whole bunch of new distributors, so we're on a whole lot of PR lists.
So we're very excited
about that.
Yeah, I don't know if we should mention names, but...
I wasn't going to mention names. Just say thanks to all those people that put us on those lists, and Geek Actually is getting more and more awesome by the day.
Absolutely. I will concur. I've had a really good week this week. I'm really, really... I'm having a good time. So it's good. But speaking of good times, we didn't have a good time with the new Michael Douglas film, Wall Street Money Never Sleeps. We have directed by Oliver Stone and written by... Now, this was actually one of the first things that I found very interesting about this film was the fact that Oliver Stone didn't write it. Now, Oliver Stone writes all of his own stuff. He was a writer before he was a director, but this time he didn't write. And that might be one of the first problems with this film. But anyway, the point is it was directed by Oliver Stone, written by Alan Loeb and Stephen Schiff, and based on characters created by Oliver Stone and Stanley Weiser from the 1987 original. I believe it was 1987. Original film. It stars Michael Douglas returning as Gordon Gekko, Shia LaBeouf, Josh Brolin, Carey Mulligan, Susan Sarandon, Frank Langella, and Eli Wallach. Now, I had to put Eli Wallach in there, even though he's only in the film for about 5 minutes, because it was one of the strangest performances I think I've seen in some time. So we'll come back to that. Now, this was straight from IMDb, this plot synopsis. It says, as a global economy teeters on the brink of disaster, a young Wall Street trader partners with disgraced former Wall Street corporate raider Gordon Gekko on a two-tiered mission to alert the financial community to the coming doom and to find out who was responsible for the death of the young trader's mentor.
That's not what happened. And can I just say that's not what happened? There was never a point where they both decided they were. We'll get into this.
Spoilers. And this is an IMDb summary, and I disagree with some of this, but we will watch the trailer first, and then we will come back and discuss this film. So this is the trailer for Wall Street: Money Never Sleeps.
Someone reminded me I once said greed is good. Now it seems it's legal because everybody's drinking the same Kool-Aid. Now, I've been considered a pretty smart guy. And maybe I was in prison too long.
One watch and one mobile phone.
But sometimes it's the only place to stay sane and look out through those bars and say, is everybody out there nuts?
Gekko was one of the biggest names on Wall Street before he went to prison for insider trading.
That name doesn't mean anything anymore.
If it weren't for people who took risks, where would we be in this world?
You might want to wipe some of the drool off your face.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
Mr. Gekko!
My name is Jacob Moore. I'm going to marry your daughter. I've been
around for my daughter hasn't spoken to me in years, and you know it.
I never knew my dad as a peaceful person. That always scared me.
Pleased to meet you.
I know it sounds crazy, but people change.
He's not who you think he is, Jake. He'll hurt us.
Why don't you start calling me Gordon? We'll be part of the family business.
You got my attention. But when you don't know what you're doing, it's fatal, Mr. Moore.
So much you don't know, Jacob.
They took my life, and when I got out, who's waiting for me? Nobody!
This is not about the money. This is about you and me.
It's about doing the right thing.
It's about the game.
I did tell you, Jake. I did warn you.
It's easy to get in. It's hard to get out.
Is that a threat?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's the trailer. Now, Josh was just pointing out as we were watching that trailer that it actually bears very little resemblance to the movie that we saw. Who wants to start? Who wants to kick us off on this? Brandon, you haven't been here in a while.
I don't think it's a good idea for me to start.
No,
this.
Maybe not. Let's hear Brandon's response to this.
Yeah, all right. you and I were talking about this a few days ago, that Oliver Stone hasn't really... we disagree on which film it was, but Oliver Stone hasn't done a good film. For me, I don't think he's done a good film since Natural Born Killers. Mm. You seem to think it's more JFK, but I actually said to you,
I think Natural Born Killers was his downfall. I think that was the film, that was his turning point.
Yeah. I actually thought that it was fairly good. Something about this film just doesn't work. It has all the components to work. I mean, it has an amazing cast. I mean, just watching that trailer there, you get, like, you've got Brolin, you've got,
it's an interesting point before you Mulligan. Go on. And I'll sidetrack you for a second. But it was an interesting point that Josh actually made to this, which was, both Josh and I are kind of coming to the conclusion, Josh Brolin isn't actually that good an actor, I don't think. I think he's fallen into some really good roles that suit him.
Yeah.
But I think that as soon as he falls out of his comfort zone,
right,
like this movie, I think you start going, he's starting to show cracks.
But I think that's why I agree with him. It's like he has such a strong casting in this movie, and you have the right people almost in the right places as well. Mm-hmm. Like all of these people, like Brolin should have been able to do really fierce.
Yes.
And there are moments where that works, and there's moments where I just think it'd be like Bruce Willis playing a sniveling crybaby. Like it just, you could, some people just don't suit a certain role.
I would like
to
see that though.
I don't think it would happen. I think that's the apocalypse bringer, something like that. But he's right. There's a really strong casting, and there was. There's so many things about this film that should have worked. You're returning, you've got good subject matter, you've got a period in time that just was so brutal. And it affected everyone, like across the world.
Let's go back to Brandon for a minute.
Very much on the same track that Josh is on. I mean, a great cast, a great team behind him. I mean, he had some very, very good assistant directors and a cinematographer. And I mean, a lot of the shots are, you know, visually they're quite nice, but I think it tries so hard to capture what the original Wall Street had. But tries to add some kind of new age kind of look how in the moment I am, and it's too in your face sometimes with its.
It's actually a trademark of Oliver Stone at the moment, I'm afraid, which is that he has gotten so far into visual glitz that he has lost sight of storytelling. And this was, as I say, this is why I think Natural Born Killers was his downfall, because this is where it started. Natural Born Killers, he kind of played
like a lump. The film, that's where the on-screen wow started to happen.
That's right. He started to get into different film stocks and colorings and different styles and moving the camera around. And he got really obsessed by this. And if you look at all the films that have come since, that's become an Oliver Stone thing. He's playing so much in the editing suite that we've seemed to have lost track of actually telling a story. You look at Alexander with its red filters and all the crap that goes into that. You look at this film, and in this film in particular, his visual metaphors, quote unquote, are so ridiculous and overblown with things like, oh my God, the stock market is dropping, the camera falls down to the road, you know, or the dominoes get kicked over, you know, and you sit there and go, oh God, really? I got the point.
Yeah.
I didn't need you to tell me or show me all these visual, it's almost like, you know, flashing words up on the screen.
Exactly.
You know? And I actually went back and watched the original Wall Street last night, after just before doing this show, because I haven't seen the original Wall Street in 20 years. I saw it in in 87 in the cinemas, and I saw it on video, but I haven't seen it in a good 20 years. 23 years ago it came out, and I sit there and I look at it, and watching it again after not seeing it for 20 years, and I do want to put out an apology straight away to Brad over at the Movie Fancast, because this is one of Brad's favorite films, the original Wall Street. Mm. And I have to say that the original Wall Street is actually not that good a film. And you sit there and you watch it and you go, I can understand why in 87 it did wow people. It was a film of its time. Mm. But I will say Michael Douglas was excellent. I thought he was Oscar-worthy in that role. He was fantastic. And you were just pointing out during that trailer that speech he gives about, somebody once reminded me that I said greed was good, is the best thing in this film. Mm. Well, in the original film, where he gives that speech about greed, for lack of a better word, is good, is the best moment in the original film. Mm. And so both films, the best moments are Michael Douglas moments. Mm. The problem with the original film is that Charlie Sheen sucked.
Or one thing that I will put in the review, which will probably go live either today or tomorrow for Wall Street, the movie itself, is that if nothing else, that film taught us one thing. Martin and Charlie Sheen should never occupy the same space at the same time.
No, and the funny thing is, in the original film, Martin Sheen is doing a really good job. Mm. And I really love Martin Sheen, and he's got this kind of gruff nature to him. And all, and you sit there and go, don't act with your son, though.
And it just felt really awkward, and both their eyes have this real flash of anger the entire time they're talking. There's just no comfortable nature.
The only thing that could have made those scenes more awkward is if they thrown Emilio Estevez into the mix, you know?
Oh, that'd be awesome. What's going on around here, guys?
That would have been like critical mass. Yeah, but yeah, so I just look at it and go, so, you know, with the exception of Michael Douglas, the original Wall Street the dialogue is actually very stilted in the original version. Charlie Sheen angry acts the entire film. And when I say angry acts, he actually delivers every line on the full stop with a finger. It's like he's punching you with his finger. So he'll sit there and go, "You don't know what I want from you." You know? And it's like, and it's like you sit there and go, "What the hell are you doing? Stop." You know?
He's trying to do, he's very much reminds me of a bad Tom Cruise in that movie. Like, it's kind of like Tom Cruise wasn't around.
And he has Tom Cruise's hairdo as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
He was really trying to be Tom Cruise.
No, exactly. That was kind of like, if they had to put Tom Cruise in that movie, it might have been a hell of a lot better.
It almost felt like Tom Cruise was supposed to be in this film.
I reckon they couldn't get him.
And Charlie Sheen stepped in, and Oliver Stone had already decided, because Born on the 4th of July had already come out, so he'd worked with Cruise.
I almost guarantee you, if you look back in time, that's what I reckon happened. I reckon it was written with him in mind. Okay. And they just went, who do we have that's like a cheaper version?
Yeah, it kind of feels that way. Yeah, and look, and then there you got your support cast, you got your people like, I mean, look, I love Hal Holbrook. I mean, Hal Holbrook is one of my favorite actors of all time. I just love him. And I liked him in Wall Street, but there wasn't enough of him. You know, he was the elderly broker who was trying to take him under the wing and say, you shouldn't go for the fast money, you know? And he's really good, and I really like Hal Holbrook. Not enough of him. John C. McGinley, I really love as an actor, but he was such a dorky character in the original Wall Street. You think of, bleh. Anyway, I will give Wall Street Money Never Sleeps 1+, which is his casting is much better. Shia LaBeouf was surprisingly good.
Very good.
You know?
Yeah.
And I thought, I mean, I'm a big fan of Mulligan. I think she does a really good job in this. Yes, she cries a little bit too easily. It is a bit of a party trick with her, but she does it so effortlessly that I forgive her. Look, she is a wonderful actress. She is the best thing in An Education. The film was a waste of time. Mm. She was charming and beautiful and had such energy in that film. And she brings a lot to the role of Winnie Gecko, you know? And I like that. I didn't buy the actual arguments that she was why she was mad at her father. I didn't quite understand some of the hatred towards her father.
I don't know. That was something I actually did, because I find that a lot of child-father relationship arguments are usually fixed within just a few sentences if people just try. And usually it's like, it is that sort of thing. It's like, I don't like my dad because he left and I'm blaming everything on him. So I don't think you had to buy it. The whole point was it was irrational. That's what it is.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, no.
And
okay,
look, there is, of course, that reality that she understands, which is that he will never change. And she knows that, but she's willing to give it a try. She just doesn't want to. You know, it's that I bought her as a character. I agree with you. She's too emotionally unstable, and I wonder how far that runs. But, it's just one of those things where she just seems to just be so on kilter in every shot that you're just like, here come the waterworks.
And now, when we mentioned Carey Mulligan, you kind of flinched there. You're not a big fan of Carey Mulligan.
Oh, I'm not saying that I'm not a fan of her. I just didn't think it was a great role for her in this. This movie, I just felt...
I bought what she was doing, but I'm with you. Like,
I was just like, okay, that's just a role that you did, and, you know, that's not going to go down as something
my eyes were always on Gordon or Shia LaBeouf's characters. Shia was actually doing a great job. I have to agree with you, and I said this, like, ages ago, like, towards the start of when we first started working together, that I want to see this guy step out of his comfort zone. I want to stop him being male inadequacy, which is basically what he plays. He plays the geek character that's cool but not quite cool enough, and this was a really good example of that. Like, he was on key, and he was, you know, he was playing a decent role, and he had good emotion to him. He was dawning that one shot that you get in the film when the guy jumps in. Something happens, we won't say exactly what it is, but someone close to him dies, and there's that shot through the glass panes at him. I really felt like real emotion from him, because it's just, you just see it in his face. This is just complete forlornness, like something really awful has happened. I was sitting there, I'm like, wow, you actually can do a decent acting job.
Yeah, and I've said that since the first time I actually saw him in a film. I kind of went, wow, I really like this guy. Mm. I would like to see what he can do with his career. And the problem is that he's basically played the same character over and over and over again. Mm. And it is nice to see him stretch.
Yeah.
Do something a little bit different with his career. I can kind of dig that. Let's talk about some of these support players. Now, I put Eli Wallach in there as being one of the strangest characters.
What the hell was he doing?
Look, we, both Josh and I, both raved about Eli Wallach in The Ghost Rider. In The Ghost Rider, as that little cameo that he had. And I said, boy, it was nice to see him on screen again because I love Eli Wallach. And then he turns up in this, and when I saw his name in the credits, I went, hey, Eli Wallach, this could be good. What the hell was that character with the little bird whistles and the pointless characterizations that he's doing made no sense at all. And you sit there and go, are you just going senile? Or
yeah.
It's like, what is the deal with this? So I was really like, Eli Wallach, no, I think it's time to retire if that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Continuing on with pointless characters from powerhouse actresses, what the hell was Susan Sarandon doing? This goes up there with her.
Yeah, and I think you stated it best when we left the cinema, saying it was one or two plots too many. Because she didn't... I understand they were trying to kind of, you know, sell the fact of, you know, the kind of people that were around in that time and, you know, the way people reacted. But she... Her whole plot just didn't need to be there. Like, she didn't help the casting along.
Well, okay, so for those who haven't seen the film, I tweeted this out as soon as I finished watching the film. I basically said, just saw Wall Street. It was 20 minutes too long and 5 subplots too many, you know? Because basically, Oliver Stone directs his agenda, basically, whatever his agenda of the moment is, this is what he does. I mean, he's famous for it, right? So his agendas are obviously green tech and power, because he's really pushing this whole fusion thing. His agendas are obviously the financial crisis, which is what this film is basically trying to be. And he obviously, a part of that was the whole home crisis, the whole land and subprime crisis. So he decided to put all of his agendas into one film, because this film goes on with long explanations about how fusion power works, and who cares, quite frankly. We just need to hear the words fusion power and be left with it, you know, okay. We didn't need to go in. I mean, once we start dealing with the financial crisis, we didn't need to go into every little subsect of it. We didn't need to have the mother character who sells and flips houses saying, I can't sell my houses anymore.
Yeah.
It's a pointless subplot. You know, move on. It took away time from what we were really interested in seeing, which was the whole mentor relationship between Gecko and Shia LaBeouf. We wanted to see Michael Douglas.
Oh, and I also wanted to see the sort of relationship between Shia's character and Brolin's character. That was important to me as well, because I liked the way that it worked together, and it was kind of, it reminded me of Gecko from the first one. You know, it was that real kind of power hungry kind of a situation, and sort of there was that relation. The thing, I'm gonna go on a quick rant here. Okay.
Oh, go for it.
Okay, number one.
Wouldn't
I
be
hate,
our show without your rant.
I hate Oliver Stone. I have always hated Oliver Stone. Now, I am missing a few key movies that we've talked about.
Yeah, we've talked about. Yeah. We're gonna fill you in on some of the early ones.
Absolutely. And I will do my best to give you the most unbiased I can. But this man just frustrates me, okay? He is a bad director. He is a hack director, okay? As far as I'm concerned, every movie I've ever seen, I've just been like, you have no idea what you're doing. This movie is completely off the rails, and I felt the exact same way about this. I was with this movie for the first quarter. The first quarter, with all the important plot points and the development of the characters and the Jewish guy, which I can't remember his
name. Frank Langella.
Frank Langella.
One of my favorite
Frank,
characters.
Frank Langella was the best thing in this film for me. I bought him right the way through, and I bought his character, and I felt for all of his things. Like, I mean, Gordon's Gordon. I expected that. But I'm saying, by your initial characters, he was the standout performance for me. And, like, he was there, and I was with that, and sort of up to, you know, sort of the first quarter of the film, I was going, that's fine. And then I turned over at one stage and said, this film's gone soggy. And it was just like the rest of the film had no life in it. And the reasons this man pisses me off, number one, he's pretentious freaking work that we were talking about, of just ridiculously stupid, over-exaggerated screen points just to fill people in on what's going on.
And if you watch the original Wall Street, for all of its flaws, he never did that.
Exactly.
You know, he never used to do that sort of stuff, you know?
Exactly, and I don't know why he does it, and I don't know why he's obsessed with it now, but it just, it drove me insane. Those dominoes sent me into white fury, because it's like, I don't think anyone in this cinema, anyone, even though there was only 12 people, I don't think anyone in this cinema was actually not aware of what was going on at the time, and we don't need stuff like that. Number two, like we were talking about, there is just no need for ridiculous amounts of plot points. And the ending of this film, I'm still not quite sure what they were trying to say. When we got to the end of this film, it should have finished about four times before it got to the end of the film.
Agreed.
And I don't know whether it was Hollywood or test screenings, but why did we have to have this ridiculously unnecessary happy ending?
And it
ending?
Can't be Oliver Stone has so much power that they just let him do what he wants to do, because his last few films have all bombed. All right, this man does not have the clout in Hollywood that he had.
Exactly.
You know? So, and I don't know. I don't know how this film got through.
But doesn't everyone in this room feel like that last bit of the film is just tacked on the end?
That last, I got to say, without spoiling anything, the last 2.5 minutes of this movie completely unraveled, undid anything that the film could have set out to achieve.
Exactly.
It was the worst, I think you summed it up with the perfect word. It was the soggiest, sappiest, stupidest ending that you just sit there and go, oh, that's it?
Yeah.
And that's what you're left with.
I walked out of the cinema and I felt like I needed something else. Like there was going to be sort of another 10 minutes that they hadn't shown me or something. What's up?
Iron Mouse Face in our chat room says, over obvious visual metaphors make you feel like an idiot.
I actually feel the opposite. I just feel like the director is an idiot. That's the only thing that goes through my mind. I just sit there going, you're stupid if you think, because a director is supposed to be showing an audience something, right? So if you're putting that on screen, you think people need to see that.
That's right.
So you...
But Oliver Stone has always thought he was the most intelligent person in the room. Brandon... Josh has had his rant.
I'm done.
I will disagree with a few. I do quite like Oliver Stone. I just think that a lot of his most recent films have not hit the
mark. Okay, let's back up that statement and let's qualify it a little bit. So what is the Oliver Stone that you like?
Okay, the Oliver Stone, I really...
No, I'm quite serious. Am with you. I think Oliver Stone used to have something.
Like I said earlier, I do like Natural Born Killers.
Okay,
I know that for you it's a tipping point into what he's doing now, but I also like...
Look, some very smart film friends of mine really like this film, so there are a lot of people out there that really...
There's a lot of people who think
it's genius. And I've never sat down and ask people about it, so like...
But do you want to know something really funny about Natural Born Killers?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would actually throw a guess out there and say 2 out of 4 people that you ask about Natural Born Killers think it's a Tarantino film.
Yeah. Oh, well,
they don't think it's an Oliver Stone film.
It does.
They don't know Oliver Stone made it.
Yeah, but to be fair, it is a very Stone film because, as you were saying, he took it and rewrote it. So,
well, it doesn't. And for me, that always makes me cringe because it doesn't resemble a Tarantino film in any way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
And if you read the original script of Natural Born Killers, that is not the film that is on screen.
But look, people speak with broad tones over this. So, what is it you like about the film?
With this one?
No,
Natural Born Killers.
I can't put my finger on it. I kind of think it... I think Oliver Stone has quite a good relationship with his actors, I think. I don't know any stories about him on set and stuff like that, but when I watch the performances, excepting some of the performances in the original Wall Street, I think... He knows how to get the most out of an actor most times.
And we'll even qualify that, though. I agree with you, but I think he got the most he could get out of Charlie Sheen. I think the problem is, it's not Oliver Stone. I think Charlie Sheen...
And it's actually an interesting point, because I really agree with that, because even though I don't really like Natural Born Killers, one thing I will say is Juliette Lewis is... really good at playing psychotic.
She had already done something. I mean, when you watch Cape Fear, the Scorsese remake of Cape Fear, she's already got that weirdo pseudo-sexual thing going.
Agreed. She's got the pseudo-sexual, but I think Stone really pulled out the psychotic part of it.
Yeah.
He took that performance and then pushed it over the edge. Because in the other one, she's always at that point, but she's still a normal person.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, she's only ever been able to play that since.
Exactly.
I think Oliver Stone literally pushed her over.
That was going to be my next thing. I think he gets the most out of his actors. I just think that what's happened recently, and it was probably one of my main issues with W, which I thought... I was halfway through that film going, wow, this is... this is good, I'm enjoying this. And then we got introduced to all of George Bush's cabinet, and I just thought they were over-characterized. It just felt like Oliver Stone had gone, let's workshop this, let's get them pitch perfect. And then he was like, we'll go as far as we can, like over the top, far as we can, and the printer's making noise.
Yeah, our printer is printing all by itself. Our printer has become self-aware in the studio.
Skynet!
Wow.
Wait, everybody wait for a minute. What is it? We'll come back in a sec.
Printing. Do you know what it's printing? It's actually printing my sister's itinerary for her flight tomorrow. So she's obviously downstairs going, oh, just print, what the hell? You know, so if Sarah is listening, bite me. anyway, yeah. Moving on.
Yeah, and I just think that he's got, I think he really works well with actors and with his crew, because I think visually he knows what he's doing. I think it's the problem with Oliver Stone is that he doesn't know how to rein things in.
Yeah, exactly. I reckon he steps things.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, exactly. He steps things too far. Yeah. Because you look
it's
at
like
it,
Michael Moore.
I think it is where he used to have restraint,
yeah.
And he used to have control.
Well, no
JFK,
one's
Platoon, even the original Wall Street to a certain degree. Mm. Born on the 4th of July.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
You look at Salvador. You look at these films, and you go, "This is a man who is."
Yeah, but
who
I
is
wonder whether
focused.
Or not that's because now he's too powerful. I wonder whether no one's got
is
the finger on top of him going, no, that's too far, or that doesn't make sense, or it doesn't work, because he's completely right. It's the same thing with W and mm-hmm. with a lot of his films, is that he doesn't know how to end them properly, and he doesn't know how to stop. It's kind of, they just take off.
He also doesn't know how to find a singular focus anymore.
They kind of unfray.
Yeah.
It's kind of like he's got a great concept and a great idea, and you can see that, and then
quite
you
frankly,
just see it
if you
starting
read,
to...
If you read this plot synopsis from IMDb, that's a movie I'd like to see.
Oh,
exactly.
Two clear points. It's a double mission. We get in there, razor sharp. We're in and out 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know? But then what this plot synopsis from IMDb doesn't do is it doesn't talk about the other five subplots that are going on at the
I
same time.
I would imagine
time,
he's the kind of person that overthinks. And this is what I think.
This is my... Oh, sorry. Mike.
Okay.
I think he's a director. Not just a director.
Wow, Josh.
I think
we have a guest who's actually conscious of the microphone.
I know. It's very scary.
I think he is a man who is struggling to stay relevant because he was so relevant for the
80s.
That's a good
phrase. I think, and I was, because I rewatched Natural Born Killers after our discussion the other day, and I do enjoy the film. Nothing changed about that. But I do feel that lately, I think he looks at people, and I just got this image of he's watching these Michael Moore documentaries, and he's going, I'd love to make this into a film.
Mm.
And it's just like, he's a man, yeah, it's just he's art for art's sake, really. He's just trying to make a point for the sake of making a point.
I think instead of becoming the messenger, which is what he used to be. He used to be the messenger. I mean,
Born on the 4th of July was, that was a movie that had to be made.
That's right. And Platoon was a film that needed to be made at the time. Okay, it was overshadowed by Full Metal Jacket later. But at the time, nobody had made a real depiction of Vietnam at that point. And he was there, and this was his personal story. And he said, I'm a messenger, and this is what I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
Salvador was a message. It was about this is what was going on in El Salvador at a time when they were at war, right? Yeah. And this is how it is, you know? And when you look at Wall Street, he was saying, this is what goes on, you know, pay attention. He was the messenger. JFK, he said, everything that you've been told is a lie.
Yeah.
Right? He was basically saying, this is, through the eyes of Jim Garrison, a man who actually did investigate this, this is what he discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, whether it is not real or not, we don't know, but this is what he discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Very clear points, right? Yeah. Nowadays, he's kind of like, well, I'm the messenger, I've got to say this, well, I better say everything at once.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, because the other thing is, like I'm saying, I think he's just not reined in well enough again. And this is what's happening, because he has a point, he has what he wants to say, but then because he's got all this free rein and no one's sort of controlling what he's doing, what happens is he gets lost in the fine points. He starts trying to add too much. He starts trying to go, well, we need to explain and we need to make sure people are aware of this and stuff like that. He has no faith in what people
are
doing.
And he never used to be worried about that.
Exactly.
He used to say, this is my point. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's what's happening. He's trying too hard to get his message out to too many people.
Mm-hmm.
He's not worried about what he wants to say. He's worried about how many people are going to hear it.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, the exact reason why this film fails. Because he's just there's so much happening. When you get to the end, the point is lost.
Agreed. I think that is it.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this puppy up because we're already halfway through the show and we got to get a few other things out there. Yeah, let's wrap this puppy up and say, would you recommend this to anybody?
Okay, after the bit of bad mouthing we've been doing, I would say go see this because I don't think it's a terrible film. Comparing it to a lot of the films that are coming out recently in this year, I think it's up there comparatively. Not the greatest film, not a film that you know, in about 10 years we're going to be going, oh, Money Never Sleeps, wow, wasn't that just brilliant? Mm. Maybe we will, like, I don't know.
Mm.
But I would see it, because it's better to support stuff like this than a lot of the trash that is getting put out at the moment.
That's actually a really good point.
That's
your theory. Josh?
I hate Oliver Stone. I think this movie... No, I'm sorry. I think this movie is fucking awful, and I don't think anybody should see it.
Now, Josh, don't hold back, okay?
I've got more.
Hold back.
That's why I precursed that. I hate Oliver Stone, so I wouldn't suggest it. That's my reason.
I'm going to sit halfway between the two of you.
This is the angel and the devil. It's the angel and devil on my shoulder.
I'm going to sit halfway between the two of you and say that, as I said at the head of this whole... it's Australian politics, guys. All right, from a point of view where I can sit there and say, as I said at the beginning of this review, this film is 23 years and 20 minutes too late.
Well done.
It is also too many subplots for its own good. Yeah. I would actually say that it is by far not the worst thing I have seen this year. Brandon is right. Now, what I would say, though, is that I wouldn't recommend spending cinema dollars on this film, and I think it's a rental. I actually think that look, it's not the worst thing out there. It's got a great performance by Michael Douglas, which is well worth having a look at.
And Shia LaBeouf.
If nothing else, just get that bit.
Yeah, once again, the speech about greed is a wonderful
speech.
I'm going
to be bringing out my own DVD. It'll be called the Josh Cut of Wall Street Money Never Sleeps. It'll be 3.5 minutes long, and it will be all Douglas.
And no David Byrne music, right?
Let's not go into that.
So I would actually say that I would recommend to see the film if you're curious. I would actually say, though, wait for it to come out on DVD. In fact, I would say wait to come out on DVD, and if you have one, Blu-ray, because it actually has some beautiful photography in it. When it's not getting too showy, when it's just shooting, it's actually shot better than the original Wall Street in many ways. It is a very disappointing effort, though, and I actually got to say I am now at saturation point. I don't think I am actually waiting for the next Oliver Stone film. I haven't been actually for the last couple of films. I thought W once again, and it's the most frustrating thing about Oliver Stone. I think they all have things in them that are interesting.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's gelling them together
very well.
And I would say if you are interested in Oliver Stone at all, and this is what we're going to do with Josh, we're going to put him on a crash course diet, I would say that you need to see Salvador, you need to see Platoon, you need to see JFK, and you need to see Born on the Fourth of July. These four films are Oliver Stone.
Yeah.
After that, you can pretty much write anything else off, as far as I'm concerned. But that's a personal opinion. And Brad at Movie Fan House, I am very, very sorry that we have bagged out the original Wall Street, I know you love it so much. But we have to move on because we've got a few things. I want to talk about a few things. And we also have a list of five that we're going to get through, and they always take notoriously too long. We're going to shed some of this news, and we'll move it into the after show, because some of it, I'm sure we have discussion points to talk about. But I want to show this Coen Brothers trailer.
Oh, yes.
Because...
I still haven't seen this. I'm very...
It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Now, beat a back history here. If you haven't seen the original True Grit, it's a John Wayne film. And before you go, John Wayne, it is actually his best, if not second best, performance. It was later in his career. He was kind of gnarly at this point, and the Rooster Cogburn character fit him like a glove. Mm. I mean, it was just brilliant. One eye missing, alcoholic, spends his time in a stupor, and he's hired.
Basically, it was him playing himself?
Pretty much as an older man. That's right. And he was the film is basically about a young girl who hires Rooster Cogburn, who is a washed up marshal, to help avenge the death of her father. Okay, that's basically it in a nutshell. It's a revenge story. Now, the original True Grit softened the punch a little bit. It made the girl a little bit older because in the original book she was this young girl. So you had like a father-daughter dynamic sort of thing happening that kind of got lost in the original True Grit. They had a little bit of fun with it and so forth. But it's a great film. When I heard the Coen brothers were going to remake this film, they aren't remaking the film. They've gone back to the book, and they're actually doing a fresh adaptation of the original book that it's based on. The girl is a young girl again. They've gone back to that. And, of course, Josh and I talked about on the show many months ago, who the hell do you cast as Rooster Cogburn in this day and age? And names like Mickey Rourke were thrown around and stuff. No, I would have thought that was great. He would have been perfect. But the perfect casting came up, and we hadn't thought about it at the time, and we reported on it when we had it, which is Jeff Bridges. And Jeff Bridges is so good as Rooster Cogburn. Anyway, this week, the teaser trailer has surfaced for True Grit, and let's have a look at it.
Amazing.
Once I stood in the night.
I'm about to embark on a great adventure.
With my head bowed low.
I intend to see Papa's killer hanged.
They tell me you're a man with true grit.
What's your name, girl?
My name is Maddie Ross.
In the darkness, as black as the sea.
Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death.
And I cried, oh Lord.
I shall fear no one.
Take my hand.
We're talking No Country for Old Men with cowboys, man. No,
we're talking possibly the next Tombstone, like the next
thinking of Silent Trailer. I got goosebumps from that trailer. I saw that trailer and I went, we're headed for the next Unforgiven.
Oh, dude, no, even better.
We're headed for the next Unforgiven. Unforgiven, for those who haven't seen it, is Clint Eastwood's old man western, which is friggin' awesome. And I remember seeing Unforgiven at the cinema when it first came out, and we sat there, and when the credits started rolling, we were just in stunned silence, sitting there going, oh my God, that is just, you know, perfect. So I am so looking forward to this, and I cannot wait to see what the Coen brothers do with it. I love the fact that you get that one glimpse of him with the reins in his mouth with the two guns. That is an iconic scene from the original film, so they've kept that. So as long as they keep the original line that goes with that, which is, fill your hands, you son of a bitch, I'll be very, very happy, man. So I'm waiting for that. Definitely. Now, the other thing I was going to talk to you about, and we're gonna cut our news a little bit short today, is that Josh is a huge fan. I know. Sorry, I'm just jumping around the news, so the show notes don't make any sense for you guys at the moment. But the product of Preacher has come up again, and I think I've got some good news for Josh, which is a new director has expressed interest. Now, this is in the big rumor category at this point, but Darren Aronofsky has suddenly expressed interest in doing Preacher, and I'm pretty down with that. Now, I'm well on my way to finishing Preacher at this point, so I'm finally on the page with you guys.
Well, it's actually interesting because I ironically also named I Am Arseface, who is a character from Preacher, will probably agree with me, and we've said this before. I just don't want it made. It doesn't need to be made. It is in itself.
Okay, but get over that, because it's going to be made. The studios are keen on this.
No, not if I just bomb studios. If I bomb studios, then nothing will ever happen. It'll be the next Don Coyote, except for I'll be responsible for it. I will stop this from happening. No,
you will stop this from happening.
Look, Aronofsky is another good choice, you know, and like I have probably more faith in him than a lot of the directors that have kind of come to the table. But my only worry with Aronofsky is, could he pull off the comedy? Because there are large...
That's a good question.
There is a large section of Preacher that is about humor, and it's a very specific type of humor that's very easy to miss, which is what I love. I can't remember who it was. It was a German guy. He's a director anyway. He came up with this concept of the forbidden laugh, which is the concept of humor you're not supposed to laugh about. It's the kind of thing where you laugh and you instantly feel bad about it.
Would that be like the Segway guy?
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that up. I was actually going to leave that out. Anyone can watch the Tick actually
and
show.
And I apologize for that.
And we apologize. We know we're going to hell for that. But I'm just saying that it's one of those things where that is a sort of humor that only certain people will ever get right, because it is so difficult to make something so wrong funny, and this is one of those things, and I don't think Aronofsky can. has the capabilities to pull off dark comedy. And this is why probably a good 50% of Preacher is dark comedy.
Okay, like, I'll pay that. I actually hadn't thought about that when I was thinking about it. No, I think Aronofsky can handle the dark side of it.
Exactly. He could. You need like four directors on this thing to get it right. But look, I agree. He could pull off the atmosphere. He could pull off the look. He could definitely pull off probably the acting, pulling the acting out of whoever actors we pick. Right, I believe he could do all that, but unless someone's behind it to find that out, I
Callisynth
think
would
problem.
Like to put in a request. Says, while you're stopping making movies being made, can you please stop the Smurfs and Yogi Bear while you're at it? I think Josh actually doesn't have C4 in his back pocket.
No, I don't think
he is actually going to be stopping anything. So, but I actually,
yes,
I look at it.
That's what I want you all to think.
I look at it and go. If we're not going to get around it, if this thing is going to get made, if these producers are going to bug up their butt to make this, then we just got to find the best person to do it to minimize damage. All right? It's like Last Airbender was going to get made. They chose the wrong director, you know? So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what actually happens with Preacher. But here's the man for those in our chat room. I think he is a good choice for it. Out of all the people who've been mentioned so far...
Funnily enough, he also uses the same headphones as me.
As of all the people so far, I think he's probably the closest we've come to having somebody I respect.
Yes, damn right. He just needs it. He needs an assistant director, somebody with a good dark comedic mind.
Fair enough. Yeah. And last but not least, and then we're going to move on because we'll drop the rest of this news into the after show. Because for those,
if I got lucky, my pick would be Christopher Nolan. There. I'm done.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
No.
The man will only pick anything he wants to pick. If That's he right. decides to do it, I
Rumor
think he
came out
do
this
well.
Week. He actually said, because he hasn't officially confirmed, but somebody said, can we kind of safely assume you're going to be doing Batman 3? And he said, yeah, you can kind of safely assume that. So he hasn't actually signed anything, but he has come out and said, right. you can kind of safely assume I'm doing Batman 3. So very, very quickly, and we'll move on to our list of five. I just wanted to bring this picture of Star Wars up, which is all of it, right? Yeah. In one big go. Now, it came out this week that Lucas film is going to now the backstory. A year ago they showed a sample of Star Wars, the original Star Wars, in 3D. They'd done a conversion on like a scene from Star Wars, and they showed a sample of this, and everybody went fucking apeshit for it, right? They've now come out saying they are going to re-release all the Star Wars films in 3D. All six films, and they're going to do them one at a time, and they're going to take their time, and they're going to make the conversion process the best it can possibly be. Mm. Industrial Light and Magic is actually overseeing the 3D conversion.
Okay. And there you go. You just won me over.
John Knoll has actually come out saying that they are, and they're going to have third-party companies working it on it as well. And they are releasing the first one. Unfortunately, they're doing them in chronological order, so it's going to be Phantom Menace first. But, you know, what can we do?
I'm with him.
But they are going to start releasing these in 2012. The first film will be released early 2012, and then each film 1 year apart for 6 years. So it's going to be a long process. But I got to say, I don't begrudge that because I'd rather them do a good job.
Do a good job.
You know? Yeah. And I'd be very interested to see what these films are going to look like in 3D. We have seen post-conversion work. Piranha 3D showed that post-conversion
Dude, if
ILM
are on the task, man, I'm in. I'll watch it. Even though I don't like post-converts, I will watch it.
It's a callous in the sense. So looking forward to 2016 then, right? Yeah, pretty much. We will see all six Star Wars films converted to 3D in time. They are coming. I read another report that said something about February. We have no confirmed fixed date yet, though. Yep. Okay, but early 2012 will be the first. And then we also don't know. I would actually suspect that they're not going to do them 12 months apart because I think that's actually too far apart. Mm-hmm. When they released the special editions, the re-releases at the cinemas, they were actually only about 6 months apart.
Oh, right.
So, and they've got a long lead-in time on this
because
they're not going to get these out for another year and a bit anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think they've already got a long enough lead-in that
We also don't know how much they've done so far.
Well, that's right. They could have been working on this thing for the last year. All right. So we're going to the trailer. We'll push that into the after show as well. We'll push a lot of this stuff into the after show. We went long on Wall Street, unfortunately, and we want to try and keep our time under control. So we will just go straight into our – we've got another trailer, which is a new science fiction film. So stick with us for the after show. We'll have a look at that in there. So now science fiction film I've never heard of before, and I just went, what the hell is this? All right. But we do have our list of five, and let's do a list of five. Oh, let me get this graphic off the screen here. We've got a there we go. Okay, now we have a list of five. Now this week on our list of five, we've decided to do five top Michael Douglas performances in brackets, not including Wall Street. All right, so you're not allowed to use Wall Street.
Look at him
Wall
at the last Street, second. He's like,
Wall Street is a given. Okay, so we'll say not including.
That's totally not fair. You did not put that on the show.
I did put it in the show
notes.
No,
I did not say that.
I'm
reading the show notes here. It says this week five great Michael Douglas performances, not including Wall Street.
Altered.
This is not the one that was emailed to me.
Yes, it was. Actually. All right, and I'm going to start us off, and I'm going to say my number five Michael Douglas performance was Rob Reiner's 1995 comedy, The American President, with Annette Bening. I thought he was really charming. He handled romantic comedy really well, and I really enjoyed that film. So there you go. That's my number five.
Okay. You go next.
All right.
Well, now I've got a bloody...
Now, just a reminder as well, very quickly, as of this week, because we've had a request from our chat room, I need you to hand your top five list. We don't actually look at each other's top five list beforehand, but I need copies of your top five list because we're going to start putting
them
into
the forum.
It's
already in your email box. I just sent it 5 seconds
ago.
Right.
So our forum, after the shows have gone up, we will create a new forum section, which is our top fives, and we will list our top fives every week. Okay? All right. So, Brendan, you're number five.
Okay. My number five, I cheated a little bit because I don't really have five great Michael Douglas performances. My number five is actually one he produced. It's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Interesting fact.
That's fair. It's a film.
Yeah. That's right. It's actually not a performance.
But a lot of people don't know that he had a hand in producing that.
And it's a great film.
It's a brilliant film, so it needs to be on that list for that reason.
I will pay you on that one. That's fine. Now, just before we go on, Josh, people are going to ask, why are we obsessing about Michael Jackson? Michael Douglas? Michael Jackson? Well, you know what?
Why are we obsessing
about the end result could be the same. All right? Let me just put that out there. Mm. The reason why we are obsessing about Michael Douglas this week is not only because of Wall Street, but this in August, he actually did come out and say that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer. He came out on Letterman on the 31st of the 8th, 2010, and basically said he started chemotherapy. So he is...
On the way out.
He is also battling. Hopefully he'll make a full recovery. Yep, you never know. But he is fairly sick at the moment. So let's praise the man a little bit. He has had a very long career. All right. So, Josh, number five.
Number five, not my favorite out of the thing, but I thought his performance was good. Basic Instinct. I'm going to leave
I'll pay that.
I'm going to say that, seriously, it's a movie I've only ever watched once, but he was, I'll say about 50% of what I was looking at, because we were all looking at other things. Yeah. But yes, no. As
I just picked up a copy on Blu-ray.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. Okay.
You know my penchant for bad films.
Yeah.
All right. My number four is a 1979 film directed by James Bridges called The China Syndrome, which was a fabulous film all about possible nuclear power plant meltdowns and so forth. Interesting side note about it, he paid the cameraman to Jane Fonda's reporter, and he was kind of cheeky, and he really had a nice air to him. But the really interesting point about The China Syndrome, it was the first film I'd ever seen. I don't know if it's the first film. Has no score. The film actually has no music.
Wow.
When they made the film, they cut it, they get the whole thing together, and they had the composer come in to start doing the music, and James Bridges watched the cut and basically said, you know what? This is strong enough without music. And so they didn't score the film. And so it has no incidental music in it at all, which is very, very interesting. And it works. So even the opening credits are just silent. There's no music.
There you go.
Anyway. Number four.
Number four for me is actually Basic Instinct.
Oh, there you go.
I just think it needs to be there because it is a terrible film.
Yes, it is a terrible film. But no, look, he was fun. And her parting her legs was fun. All right, so your number four, Josh.
My number four is actually, I wanted to put it higher on my list because I think he was really good in it, but he isn't a major part, and it's because there are a lot of actors in this film. Traffic. There's one particular scene with him going to find his daughter, and just his emotional reaction to trying to get this guy to just let his daughter go. Just terrifying to watch, and just an absolute sort of shocking scene. So,
in fact, I'll say that I have Traffic in my honorary mentions.
Okay,
so,
cool. Yeah. Well, that would be that's my number four.
Yeah, great. Okay, my number three is actually a film that a lot of people probably haven't seen. It's a great little film, but I talked to a lot of people and they go, oh, no, I never got around to it, which is the 2000 film by Curtis Hanson called Wonder Boys, where he plays kind of the...
I almost put that on my list, but I don't remember it well enough.
University teacher who's kind of out there. He does a great job. Really, really good job. And Tobey Maguire's kind of weirdo student. So it's a good film. It was really worth having a look at. Brandon, number three.
Romancing the Stone, which I actually saw pop up.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know. I was telling people to shut up, man.
Yeah. I just... that's another one where it's... I don't think it's a very good film myself.
God!
But I it's a guilty pleasure for me. But yeah.
Okay, I actually really like Romancing the Stone.
Oh, yeah, he loves that. I love Romancing the Stone. Shut up about it. I haven't seen it yet, so he just keeps going on. Oh, you haven't seen it? Oh, hatch, whatever. Oh,
shit, man. Do the brothers broke up? When that happened? All right, Josh, you're number three.
My number three, my phone's gone dead again, is a film which I think everybody thinks is terrible. And it was one of those, I don't even know if it got to the cinema, but I actually really like it. And I think it's just because it's kind of like an African jungle version of a buddy cop film.
Oh, I know the film you're going to mention.
Yeah, which is Ghost in the Darkness, where he plays Remington,
yep.
Which is just, it was just fun. It was hell of a lot of fun, and it involved people running around chasing a giant lion.
Yeah, I saw it at the cinema, actually.
So there you go. It did hit cinemas.
Yeah, no, it hit cinemas. I saw it in the cinemas back in the... Oh, God, when did it come out?
I think it was...
Early 90s, something like that. Yeah. Late 90s, whatever it was. Yeah. Anyway, I actually saw it at the cinemas, and I actually didn't mind it. It kind of left me a little cold, but I didn't mind it.
Loved him as a character.
It's the problem is Val Kilmer, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the problem is I wasn't huge on Val Kilmer at the time. He kind of left me a little bit cold over a few films.
I think he's pretty much... Not. Yeah, exactly.
No, okay. Come on. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, he is awesome.
But that's not...
Yeah,
but that's
dude, the point. I'm sorry. Have you seen his VHS releases lately? And I'm going to call them that because they don't even deserve to be on DVD. It's like that bad.
Yeah. Whatever. Oh, The Island of Dr. Moreau. Oh, my God. Yeah. That was, I think, same year or just a year apart from The Darkness. Yeah. Okay. My number two is a Danny DeVito film from 1989 called War of the Roses, which I absolutely adore. War of the Roses, where basically him and Kathleen Turner are getting divorced, and they both refuse to leave the house. And so they start having this war in the house where they're literally trying to destroy each other and destroy the entire house in the process, and it is hysterically funny in a very bleak black way, to the point of driving over cats and all sorts of stuff. It's bleak, as only Danny DeVito could direct. All right, really good, and he's really good in it. So, War of the Roses.
Number two for me is The American President.
You go.
Something very interesting is that, its influence on the what was that Martin Sheen.
Oh, West Wing.
That's it. Yeah,
same writer.
Yeah.
Aaron Sorkin.
And it was just kind of It's kind of like how Stargate was a movie before.
Yeah, American President was definitely the impetus for the West Wing coming out.
The West Wing is probably one of my favorite shows that's ever come out. So
American President's really good. Also, American President, I will throw out there, has probably the best performance by Michael J. Fox.
Yeah,
and to this day, I live by one of the philosophies in that film, where he actually says, Michael J. Fox says, all plans are soft until 5 minutes beforehand. And I live by that philosophy. I just love that. All right, Josh, your number two.
My number two is a film that Dave's not too keen on, but I think the performance in it is just spectacular, which is Michael Douglas in The Game. The Game, he goes from a emotionless... just his character is just unbearable because he's just so pompous and just nothing will affect him at all. And by the end of the film, the way his character turns around and just becomes obsessed with staying alive and so on and so forth, and just how he loses complete control of everything around him and just becomes a completely new person, is a hell of an acting ability.
The Game in my honorary mentions, because I think he is terrific in it. And as I said to Josh, I actually think The Game is a really good film up until the last 4 minutes. I think the ending of The Game is what lets it down, but I love the rest of the film. But that's a whole different issue. That's a whole different story. But I think he's great in it. You're right. And
I'm interested to see, because how many have you got left? Have you got two?
I'm going to my number one right now.
Oh, cool.
And I think Sean Penn was also great in The Game.
Yeah.
Now, my number one is Romancing the Stone. I think he does a fabulous job in Romancing the Stone.
My God, I can't believe you don't have this one on your list.
It may be an honorary mention.
I imagine it will, but I think it deserves to be at the top of the
list. And I think I know exactly the film you're going to talk about. And it was actually one of the first ones I put down in honorary mentions, because I love the film that you're going to mention. I know it is.
We'll come back to this. Wait.
Romancing the Stone, I think, is a film which actually showed that Michael Douglas could really pull off romantic lead. Mm. And he pulled it off with aplomb. I mean, he was great. He had charm. He had wit. Mm. It was just a really fun time. And Romancing the Stone, I think, is a great film. Don't ever knock Romancing the Stone. I think it is.
I like it. I just don't think it's the best film.
I think it is a really
well-paced. He had a heart attack over there when he said it.
Really well-paced, fun action film. Yeah. Mm. We watched it again just the other night. It holds up really well, too. Yeah. All right, number one.
Number one for me is Fatal Attraction.
Mentions.
Yes. It's my number one. I know his performance is overshadowed by Glenn Close.
Very much so.
But I still think it's probably one of his more underrated.
The only reason why it didn't make my list, let me just say this, is the fact that I think he started off strong in that film, and the problem was that by the second half of that film, I didn't feel sorry enough for him.
Right.
I did. Because I think some of it he brought on himself.
Right.
And because I should have felt like, oh my God, this guy because we're supposed to reflect with him, what's going on. And I didn't.
Well, maybe it just didn't grab you, because I would actually agree with Brandon on this. I actually thought that I was with him.
I liked the film a lot. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I saw it, once again, cinemas in the 80s. I'm very old, remember. But I actually really liked the film.
Yeah.
I'd like to have seen it with the original ending, though.
Right. Oh, right.
Because they changed the ending at the last minute because of studio, and they brought her back, and, you know, she jumps out of the bathtub, and it's all really stupid, you know. But the original ending actually was a little bit darker.
Right.
So I would like to have seen that. But anyway, that's beside the point. They often change films in the last moment.
No, that's okay.
Josh, what's your number one?
My number one is the.
Can I guess?
Okay, but I just want to lead in by saying this is the best performance he has ever done.
Can I guess? Falling Down.
Absolutely. Falling Down is the best movie Michael Douglas has ever done, because it's so weird to see, because he is such an icon of that generation, and his look is so iconic. Like, the Michael Douglas look, it doesn't matter what movie he's in, he just looks like Michael Douglas.
He had Hugh Grant hair before Hugh Grant had hair.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, even, like, with the exception of maybe Wonder Boys and this, he has the exact same look. And in this film, he just goes to a completely different place, and his entire performance just gets better the more you watch, and you are completely driven to the screen every step of the way, because his character
was
just
so
mesmerizing.
Close to being on my list.
Yeah.
I put down his honorable
Your
mentions.
Reason for not putting it on your list?
Probably rewatchability. I haven't seen Falling Down that many times. I loved it when I saw it at the cinema. I've seen it on video, but I don't own a copy. You know, and it's like, it's not one of those films where I find myself wanting to go back to it all the time. I remember it very well.
Mm.
But I guess it's just, the films that are on my list are all films that I have seen many, many, many times.
Fair enough.
And I come back to them a lot because I really like what he's doing in it, what other people are doing in them. And, Falling Down is one of those films where I don't find myself watching it or finding a desire to go back and revisit it that many times.
Well, that's because it's freaking arduous. It's
horror. It's dark. I mean, let's face it. I put down, as honorary mentions, one that wasn't mentioned. I've got The Game and Falling Down and Traffic. But the one that was mentioned was, I quite liked him in Black Rain.
I've never seen Black Rain. I keep looking at it. I've picked it up four times at the store because it's in the bargain bin. And I keep looking at it, and it just looks too Tango and Cash.
It's not Tango and Cash.
I just mean in the fact that it's one of those movies that if you go back and watch it now, you see it, and you're just like, oh my God, that was not the 80s film I thought it was.
No, it's actually, Ridley Scott. It was when Ridley Scott first made that transition from doing dark and science fiction-y sort of stuff, and he kind of, this was one of his first kind of modern contemporary films, and you kind of went, oh, he can direct something other than science fiction or fantasy or what have you, you know? Mm. And it was actually kind of interesting. It's got some good moments, got some good Yakuza moments. It's not the best film in the world. When it comes to that story topic matter, the Yakuza starring Robert Mitchum in the 70s actually did it much better, but it is not a bad film. And he's actually pretty good, and Andy Garcia is pretty good in it.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually worth having a look at. It has all the hallmarks of Ridley Scott, though. So it's got really nice photography. It's really well put together, you know. So it's before Ridley Scott kind of lost his mind. So, all right. So anybody else got any honorary mentions?
Absolutely.
They want to
throw out? Wall Street from this guy, and I want to put in, and I know it wasn't actually him, but I just think it was awesome, the small skit done in one of the early Family Guy episodes with him in it, where he just has a one-line thing in it, and it's done by a voice actor who just pulls his voice off perfectly. And yeah, anyone that hasn't seen that episode, go find it. It is hilarious.
Cool. Anyway. And you know what? The voice actor is probably what's his name? The guy who makes
it could
serious?
Be, but it's so close. It's so close. It could be him.
His imitations are amazing.
Yeah,
he is pitch perfect on many things that he does. Okay, we're going to get ourselves out of here. We've got a few more news stories. We're going to throw these into the after show, but we've got to wrap this up because we've got to move on to the after show, quite obviously. Now, the after show is actually going to be just reminder, it's going to be a little bit of a shorter after show this week because I have to be somewhere at 4 o'clock, so we have to get out of here. But just really quickly, we'll throw out a little bit of housekeeping to our friends. We will say that if you don't listen to the Real Junkies podcast, you should. Real Junkies at weekendronan.com. They basically review films from a fan's point of view as well, and they get drinking a lot of tequila while they're doing it. It's a lot of fun. And you can catch them on iTunes. R-E-E-L is what you search for, Real Junkies, or find them on their website at weekendronan.com. Now, the other guys we've got to plug because they gave us such a massive push. May have overstepped the bounds a little bit last week going, boys, you just never push us and all this sort of stuff. And we're talking, of course, about the Movie Fan Cast. This week they gave us this wonderful talk-up, basically saying how wonderful we were, and they signed off the show with our name. And so, guys, MovieFanCast at MovieFanHouse.com, or right this instant, also at MovieFanHouse.com, and they also have their Walking Dead podcast coming up. These guys,
I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too. And where's our invites, guys? We want to come along to that. We want to get onto that bandwagon. These guys are great. They have a lot of fun. Their show gets better and better every week. And Brad's new show, Right This Instant, it's really interesting. I've been on the show myself, but it's really in-depth. They did Mulholland Drive this week, the David Lynch film, and they really dissected it. And it was very, very interesting. So they really, the whole show is about them really dissecting older films. So it's really good. Have a listen to them, moviefanhouse.com. They're well worth having a look at. Now, we also know this other site, you know, got to mention this really quickly. I kind of throw it out there, but it's called rawdlc.com. Josh, tell me about Raw DLC.
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. We do news on the actual site. We also have a podcast, and we also go out live, which I forgot to actually give times for in the earlier show, the tech show. But it is 8 p.m. on Tuesdays. We have a brand new board system.
8 p.m., so there's more than one 8 p.m. on a Tuesday.
What?
Sorry, you said 8 p.m.
It's probably just a slur. My lips are dry. I need another drink.
Hassling you, man.
8 p.m., which, do we have to fix something up for American users now? Because we're going to be in daylight saving by then.
I have no idea what time it's going to be.
I don't know. Just keep checking. Our site constantly until we go live.
Australian Eastern Time is UTC plus 10, okay? Get a UTC clock, adjust it by plus 10, and you'll figure out your times. Mm-hmm. But we're about to hit daylight savings. So it's going to be UTC plus 11, I believe.
And don't forget, this will be all the Geek Actually shows as well.
That's right.
And also find us on iTunes, and both us and all of Dave's shows, please give us ratings. They help us go up.
Yeah, I was about to say, very quickly, we really, really, really do need iTunes ratings on Tech Actually and Film Actually, because we're starting to get up there on the ranks. As we said at the head of the show, we finally started to chart. iTunes uses this weird mojo magic where it's combined of ratings, user reviews, and download numbers to make your status. We're getting good download numbers at the moment, but we haven't had a new review or a new rating for a little while. So if you are an iTunes user, please throw up a review or even just rate us, because that will help us. And look, I want you to be honest. You don't have to give us 5 stars. I'm not going to go begging for that.
Just 4.
Just whatever. We just need a rating. Okay, so we just need the ratings. We need the reviews to get that pushed up the ranks, because we really want to try and get this show up on that front page all the time. That would be awesome. Okay. All right. And as a reminder, we said this on the tech show, we've also got our completely new range of Cafe Press stuff is now out with the Film Actually, Tech Actually, and so forth logos on it. You can find the link on the front page of geekactually.com, or just go to cafepress.com.au/geekactually and you'll find our shop front. And you'll find all those wonderful t-shirts and mugs and everything else. It's all wonderful stuff. You can follow our fan page, facebook.com/geekactually. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/DavidMcVeigh. And just a reminder that this show does go out live. If you want to watch us live every week, we go out. We start the shows at 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Time on a Saturday. We start with tech, actually, for an hour. We do film, actually, then we do the after show. Come and join us in the chat room. It's a lot of fun. Brandon, where can people find out more about you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. That's all I've got at the moment. Twitter, it's twitter.com/brandonicism. BRANDONICISM. Yes,
you never do anything easy, do you?
No. It's just... I know.
All right, spell that one more time for our audio listeners.
BRANDONICISM.
Fantastic. And you're going to write that down so I can put it in the show notes.
I will.
Okay. And Josh, where can people find you?
Local bars, strip clubs. I don't know. Facebook.com/geekjosh.
Okay. And just a reminder, anybody who's going to follow any of us personally, if you need to be approved, like in Facebook, you need to put a little note as to where you found out about us.
Otherwise, because we'll ignore you.
That's right. Otherwise, and you're just
also
spam.
Also, because we don't
spam.
You are spam otherwise. Brandonicism. Okay, fair enough.
It's the new movement. All the kids are on it.
All right. We're going to move into the after show in just a few minutes. I want to say thank you very much for everybody who's joined us. I think I have – oh, no, one person I just haven't plugged. I've got to throw out plugs for everybody. All our new stuff in CafePress.com, of course, is based on the artwork of Josh Spencer and his new logos. They're fantastic. And you can find him at attackninja.blogspot.com, which I think is one of the best domain names.
And hilarious cartoons.
And they are. He's a terrific artist. Go check out his stuff. And remember, purchases of the t-shirts and stuff in the Cafe Press site help not only keep this store running, but we are also sending a small percentage to him, okay, for his wonderful artwork. All right, so that is it. I think we're done. Now, as is tradition now on film, actually, if I can find it, I'm just looking for it here. Hold on a second. As is tradition, we go out where possible with a selection of music from the film we reviewed. This week is no exception. This week we actually have a piece of the track by, I think it's Craig Armstrong, who did this track. We're not playing one of the David Byrne ones because I know Josh would have a conniption fit. So we are going out with a track from the score of Wall Street Never Sleeps. I want to say thank you guys. Thank you, chat room. Thank you, everybody
thank you
who's
much.
Listening. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, if maybe not the Oliver Stone films, but in a lot
but
of
he
other,
tries.
He tries. He
apparently
tries.
Apparently old Oliver Stone films.
And, well, yeah, there you go. And we'll see you all next week.